everybody. How are you doing today? I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And it is all about food. So many things are connected to food. The food we grow, the food we eat. Food affects us in so many profound ways. And we talk about that here. Sometimes it's serious, sometimes it's silly, sometimes it's joyful, sometimes I hope it's always informative. But it's one of my favorite subjects, food. But I want to tell you, I do have some other interests, believe it or not. I've talked about them from time to time on this program. I've been in California now for 8 weeks. We're here for one more week. We just finished directing a production of Fiddler on the Roof in San Jose. I'm so glad that we got through it. It's finished. It was wonderful. I'm exhausted. And it was my debut conducting. And I learned one thing, that conducting is a fabulous upper body workout. My arms have never gone through what I went through, especially two shows a day with my arms up for 3 hours at a time. It's amazing stuff. I recommend it. And, you know, I can talk about Fiddler on the Roof on a show called It's All About Food because actually there are some food-related topics in the program. The lead character is a dairy man. And one of his daughters is matched up with a butcher. It's a very lovely, interesting story, and I was very honored to be a part of it. Now, to move on to the heart of today's program, which I'm really looking forward to, I want to bring on my guest, Susan Pierce Thompson, who is an adjunct associate professor of brain and cognitive sciences at the University of Rochester and an expert in the psychology of eating. She is the president of the Institute for Sustainable Weight Loss and CEO of Bright Line Eating Solutions, a company dedicated to sharing the psychology and neuroscience of sustainable weight loss and helping people live happy, thin, and free. And her new book is coming out very soon, Bright Line Eating, the Science of Living Happy, Thin, and Free. Susan, welcome. How are you?
Oh, hi, Karen. It's so good to be back with you.
Yes. Well, I don't know if you remember, but it was almost 2.5 years ago when I had you on the program.
Yes.
And you had reached out.
Long time ago.
It was. And so much has happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing.
It's been a crazy 2 years of my life. Indeed.
Yeah. So you had connected with Ocean Robbins and to see if there was some sort of collaboration that could be done. And I've been working with them. We were developing a course at the time, and Ocean asked me to speak with you. And I was so blown away when I spoke with you with all of the information that you had. I have an engineering background. I believe in science. Everything you said was science-based, and that's what I loved about it. So over the last couple of years, you've actually put all of this into amazing action, and now you have a book.
Yeah. I mean, the whole purpose at the beginning was to write a book. Actually, that was the whole purpose of everything. But, you know, it's interesting. I'm starting to think that actually the book was the universe's way to get me off my duff and, you know, do all this other stuff. Yeah, I mean, since we talked last, you know, Bright Line Eating started. I started these online boot camps. You know, since we last talked, 450,000 people have joined my email list. Since we last talked, you know, the videos, the science-based videos on the neuroscience of food addiction and why it is that some people just really can't seem to lose weight and how their brain is malfunctioning and what they can do to reverse that. Those videos, they're called the Food Freedom video series. They've been watched by hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people in 190 of the 195 countries on Earth, everywhere except for like North Korea, where they don't have internet access. And we've helped thousands and thousands and thousands of people to get happy, thin, and free, to lose all their excess weight and keep it off. And our program works orders of magnitude better than any other weight loss program on the planet. We've started a long-term research follow-up study, a research program that's following people, and the results are starting to come in from the earliest people who are just joining the program, probably around the time you and I talked 2.5 years ago. We've got our earliest people, so 2.5 years of data on them. And we have a lot of, you know, weight loss maintainers, people who, you know, used to have BMIs in the overweight or obese or morbidly obese range, who now have a BMI of 2021, 22, and, you know, are experiencing little to no cravings ever, and improved mood, reduced medications, like really living the dream. Like, finally, Brightline Eating has solved their food problem, their weight problem, their food problem. And because it's all about food, as you know, so many other issues that go along with it, right? Like the identity formation. Anyway, long story, but I talk too long sometimes. I don't want to go off on a soliloquy, but I could keep going. It's been an amazing 2 years.
Well, I will encourage you to keep going, but you do have a talent for talk. I will give you that.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what is amazing is the weight loss industry is huge. It's a big moneymaker. You've mentioned in your book about 2 billion people worldwide are overweight. 600 million are obese here in the United States. 108 million people are on a diet, and most of them don't work.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't work at all.
Huge numbers.
99.9% of people will not lose their weight and keep it off. Lose their, you know, get down into a right-sized body, which is what they want, you know, to look good in a pair of jeans, to feel good in a bathing suit, you know. Yeah.
So some of what's happened, now, I know that food issues, there are many different parameters that affect people's relationship with food. Many people have emotional issues, even when we don't even consider the industrial food that they're eating. And so that's a big problem. But your program addresses so many things. The issue of our brain getting totally messed up on food that we're not meant to eat. And then also emotionally related issues. One thing, you told a story in your book about your bringing your daughter on a road trip with a friend, and when she was 2 years old and she got all angry and screamy and wasn't being accommodating, and your friend offered a little snack for your daughter. And I was like, well, such a simple little thing like that. And you talked about the enforcement of negative reactions and food and how that relationship grows.
Totally. Yeah, right. So the story is my 2-year-old was not wanting to get clicked back into her car seat to go home. And she was screaming, and I was like wrestling with her and trying to get her into the car seat. And my friend, meanwhile, like rummages in our day bag and comes up with a little baggie of crackers and like bunny crackers and raisins, and like hands it to me to give to her. And I like threw it into the back seat, and I like kept like clicking my daughter into the seat. And then I like took a few deep breaths. And as we're driving back, I just thought, you know, do I bring this up with her? Cause I knew what I was thinking at the time, you know, like she's not hungry. She doesn't need food right now. But you know, the friend was actually, you know, someone who does Brightline Eating and was, you know, losing her weight and starting to feel better. And I thought I'd use it as a teachable moment. And I said, you know, she wasn't hungry. Like what you were doing right there was conditioning her to associate like food and soothing, essentially, like to turn every negative emotion into a conditioned reinforcer to eat, essentially.
And everybody has that.
Totally. Parents, you know, offer cookies and crackers when they want us to shut up, essentially. And it's the beginning of learning to stuff it all down. Yeah.
Okay. The other big thing, and I remember you talking about this when I first spoke with you, is this sugar and flour thing. These are white powders, just like cocaine, and sugar is more addicting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to rats it is. They pre-addict rats to intravenous cocaine. They shoot them up with cocaine over and over and over again. And then they let them ride for a little bit without a hit of cocaine, so they want one. And then they offer a choice between cocaine and sugar, and they prefer the sugar under those conditions. Already addicted to cocaine, they would rather have some sugar.
Yep. And I know. Wow, the influence of sugar on many people. It is so crazy.
Yeah. I mean, now, one estimate is, you know, 8 times more addictive than cocaine. And, you know, this is something that I just want – this is a drum that I want to start beating a little bit. So if I may, there is controversy in, you know, the media.
I'm beating the drum.
Oh, you're beating – I was like, why is she starting to type? Doesn't she know she's still alive? There is controversy around food addiction. And, you know, there are papers published saying that it's not like really a real thing and whatever. And what I want to say about it is that there is no controversy around it among people who study neuroscience and addiction. People who study the brain and addiction to anything understand that food addiction is real because it is the same thing in the brain. And the brain of a food addict is the same brain as the brain of a heroin addict, a cocaine addict. And so the controversy exists around, for example, nutritionists who treat, you know, bulimics and anorexics, and they really recoil against any foods being labeled as bad foods, and they think that that's not a good thing for us to demonize these foods and that kind of thing. And I just, I mean, my PhD is in brain and cognitive science, and I'm just, you know, I am a food addict myself. I have a super addictable brain, and I just kind of shrug, and I'm like, you know, the data is really clear, actually, when you look at the brain, when you look at the nucleus accumbens, the seat of real addiction. And I personally, my background is I've been addicted to crystal meth. I've been addicted to crack cocaine. I got clean when I was 20. I haven't had a drug in a long time. But I know what addiction feels like, and sugar is worse. I'm telling you, it's worse.
Okay. Now, myself, me, Karen, I have never had a weight loss problem. I guess I'm a fortunate person. And so when I hear about programs for diet, it's hard for me to relate. Mm-hmm. And I see it all around me. I know people have problems. But I from my own point of view, I'm like, come on, just get disciplined. Just, you know, do it. I'm a very disciplined person. And you talk about willpower in your book, and I know I have a lot of willpower. But I acknowledge now that we are not all the same, and many people have had their brain affected by sugar and flour, industrial foods, processed foods. And I want to talk about your program a bit. So I know people have said that your program is rigid. And yeah. I had like a epiphany this morning because I want to enforce the importance of that. So
yeah. I know. I'm like, yeah, it is.
Yes, it is.
So it's pretty structured. Yeah.
I am. I've been vegetarian since 15, vegan since 30. It's been over 28 years for me as a vegan. And I think about my own lifestyle, and people have said to me, oh my God, your diet is so rigid. And I don't think it's rigid. And I do all kinds of things. I distill my water every day. I sprout. I cook my own food. I make things from scratch. But for me, it's like routine and a pleasure because yeah. I know what I'm getting out of it. And so I realized it's not rigid to me because I know what my goals are and I know what the benefits are. So for people who really want to lose weight, they need a systematic plan, not easy in the beginning.
Yep.
And then they retrain and the brain gets healthy and happy ending.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so perfect that you brought this up, Karen, and I love your examples. And I also want to propose that it's not rigid to you because you know your goals, you know your values, you know your motivations, but it's also not rigid to you because you have these habits around it, right? Mm-hmm. Just like brushing your teeth twice a day, every day, like says the person in 1750, right? Brushing your teeth twice a day, every day, like that sounds so extreme to someone from 1750 where they brush their teeth never or, you know, whatever. I don't know what their oral hygiene was like then, but I'm banking on that it wasn't that good. You know, and to us it's like, not that big of a deal, dude. You know, you put the toothpaste on the toothbrush and like I get it done with zero effort, right? And the reason is because I have this amazing pattern of automaticity. It's not being governed by the part of the brain that governs choice and decision, you know, and that fluctuates with my mood and my level of motivation. It happens in the basal ganglia where stuff just gets executed automatically. You're not thinking about that. And so in the same way, you know, eating three meals a day and not snacking in between, yeah, it's rigid at first. And then it's like, well, actually, breakfast, lunch, and dinner get wired into your routines really nicely. And then the no thank yous in between become really automatic too. And all of a sudden, the weight's pouring off and your eating is in a groove. And, you know, so yeah, it's hard at first. It's rigid at first. And, you know, people say it's rigid. They also say it's extreme, to which I look around at the consequences as a society that we're suffering from right now, from the way we're eating. And I just, my eyes widen. I say, you want to know what's extreme? 80,000 people this year in America are going to walk into a leg amputation that they knew was coming because they can't stop eating the way they're eating. Like, they're diabetic. Their doctor has told them, you know, the next time we're cutting off your leg.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep eating. 80,000 mm-hmm. people. I'm not talking about 5 people
yep.
every 10 years. I'm talking about 80,000 people every year. And, you know, our kids, that's diabetes. And half of our kids of color are going to grow up and have diabetes. A third of our white kids are going to grow up and have diabetes. One third. Look around us. Go to a school and count them off.
But that's,
1 in 3.
That's normal. That's not extreme. and that's like triple or quadruple bypass surgery. Break open my sternum. Sure. You know?
Right. Exactly.
That's great. I don't want to change my eating habits. No. Give me major surgery.
Right. Two-thirds of people, literally two-thirds of people dying way too young, totally in pain, totally uncomfortable over their bodies and the foods that they're eating and, you know, not maybe not being able to see their granddaughter get married or, you know, whatever it is. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess it's extreme, but I think that really we've accepted terrible consequences, not to mention the financial consequences that are coming over the next 10, 20 years. They're here already, but the finances are going to get worse. That's what's going to get really scary. We can't afford to eat the way that we're eating. So for what the one third of people who have really addictable brains like mine and the other one third who, you know, have moderately addictable brains, you sound like a one third who doesn't have an addictable brain, Karen. I'm just guessing. I don't know if you've taken the susceptibility quiz. Do you know what your susceptibility score is?
I think I took it when it first came out and I don't remember. So I'm going to have to take it again.
Yeah. I think you're low, but, you know, for the people who are high like me, you know, it's unfortunate. Our brains are going to work against us unless we take some pretty drastic steps. Like, you know, quitting smoking is drastic if it's 1955 and everybody smokes and you're trying to get healthy. You know the deal. You know it's not healthy. You know, they'd say, you know, come on, let loose. Have some cigarettes. It's fine. You know, but once you know better, you know, yeah, it takes some drastic action to get healthy sometimes.
Now, your program incorporates some concepts of the 12-step program.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, some people have, like, knee-jerk reactions. Oh, 12-step program. But there's good things in the 12-step program, and you've taken them and incorporated them.
Yeah, yeah, totally. I mean, my background is 12-step programs. I got clean and sober in a 12-step program when I was 20. I'd spent 20 years, literally 20 years, in 12-step food programs, and I'm not in one right now, but that's my background, for sure. And, you know, in essence, I mean, I guess the biggest part of the basis from a 12-step program is that abstinence leads to freedom. Like, if you're an addict, quitting leads to freedom. You know, that for the cigarette addict, quitting smoking leads to freedom. The nicotine moderation program, not so much. You know, the like, I'll try having 1 or 2 or 3 cigarettes a day. Not so much. Quitting smoking leads to freedom. And my program also incorporates a lot of the support of 12-step programs that, like, we don't do this alone. We don't do it in a vacuum. It really helps to band up with other people and do it with support. My program incorporates a lot of sort of the mental retraining of 12-step programs, you know, like the one day at a time mentality and things like that. And then there's a lot of things that are different. Like, my program is really rigorously scientifically grounded, where 12-step programs don't talk at all about the science of what works and what doesn't work. My program is malleable based on new science, you know, that might be done or might come out. So there's differences for sure. My program's all the support's online, so there aren't like face-to-face meetings that people go to or anything, or sponsors or anything like that. My program's much more online and self-directed and stuff like that. But there's definitely a legacy of 12-step influence in Bright Line Eating, for sure. And proudly so. Like, I think 12-step programs are amazing and I love them. And I'm very grateful to all my 12-step brothers and sisters who gave me my life back when I was 20 and a crack addict. Like, yeah, very grateful.
Okay, the other thing I want to talk about is weighing food. And I want to first say where I come from, someone who has never had a weight problem.
Right.
and I have always had a focus on eating healthy. And I have found the foods that I believe, based on science, are the healthiest for me. And I'm a big fan of Dr. Joel Fuhrman and his G-bombs, greens, beans, onions, mushrooms, nuts, and seeds. I love the fact that I can eat huge giant salads when I want them and eat all the beans I want. And I have freedom that way because I have a whole pool of foods I know are good for me and which ones I can eat all that I want. And I eat them when I want. And it's cool. But you have designed a program of weighing food and eating at specific times. And I acknowledge that that is an important part of the program.
It is. And there's, I mean, I don't know how much controversy is like active, but I do know that there's like some YouTube videos out there of like interviews of people who are really prominent in the Whole Foods plant-based community talking about that weighing food is ridiculous and totally unnecessary. And I mean, I guess, well, first of all, what I love is that you prefaced everything you said with like, I've never had this issue, right? So if you have a brain that doesn't work this way, I'm sure it's really easy to misunderstand. And, you know, the argument that like there's no animal out there in human nature that needs to weigh its food. And, you know, to which I want to say, like, if you raise those animals on the types of food that are, you know, that like we raise our kids on, with sugar and flour being introduced, you know, by age one to pretty much everybody. I mean, rice flour is the first food that's put in baby's milk. That's an addictive food. And, you know, 60% of American one-year-olds are eating candy every day. So, you know, if you rewired their brains, you know, you would find probably that one third of them would develop food and weight problems to the point where they you would need to restrict their food quantities probably for them to get back down to a normal weight. I mean, I'm just saying. So, I mean, I guess what I want to say about weighing food is that there are a lot of refugees in Brightline Eating from the whole food plant-based world where they just tried to eat the right foods in any quantity at any time, and they just couldn't get to the promised land. What happened is their food choices started skewing toward the black bean brownies and the oat date bars. You know, and they would try to not eat them so much, but they would have these moments where they would find themselves standing in front of we're talking about Star McDougalers, like standing in front of the fridge, shoveling black bean brownies into their mouth out of the freezer by the fistful, you know, and thinking, well, this is okay, because, you know, this is an allowed food, you know. And so, you know, I just want to say that quantities in and of themselves are potentially a real issue. Like, I myself can eat probably 12 pounds of roasted butternut squash. I can eat 5 massive Honeycrisp apples. Like, I can just overeat on the whole real food, you know, and then you add, you know, any access to cashews and raisins, forget about it. Right. So, quantities in the brain of an addictable person will, wire, alas, to trick them into eating more food than they need, and they will keep weight on, and they will be whole food plant-based, eating only whole food plant-based foods, like you said on the Joel Fuhrman list, and they will not be able to keep themselves from eating the slightly more hyper-palatable versions of those to excessive quantities, and it will keep them unhealthy, and it will keep them not achieving their goals.
And so, you know, I want to say that Joel Fuhrman will tell you not to eat too much of certain foods, but because it's not black and white, all or nothing, for some people, they don't know how to moderate.
Yeah, they just can't. It's like telling the cigarette smoker to just have 2 or 3 cigarettes. They, you know, they try and they're back up to a pack a day, and they feel shameful, and it's like their fault, you know, whatever. But, you know, so I guess all I want to say is I'm a big believer in a couple things here. First of all, the susceptibility scale. Some brains are highly susceptible to addictive foods. And unless you've had a brain like that, you know, I mean, I just don't know what to tell you. Like, that's how my brain works. I'm like the Lorax who speaks for the trees, right? I advocate for people who have a brain like that. Like, if you don't have one, you just don't know, you know? Like, before I got slender, you know, using these principles, including weighing food, I had run a marathon. I was happily married. I had a PhD in brain and cognitive sciences. I could set my mind to anything and solve it, achieve it, do it. I'd climbed tons of massive mountains, literally like physical mountains, rock climbing, mountaineering. And I could not shed those 50 pounds, those 60 pounds that I was carrying. I just couldn't shed them. And as soon as I started putting my food on the scale, I had the most tremendous freedom. For me, it produces freedom in the same way that quitting smoking finally produces freedom for the nicotine addict. And I know that we're not always talking about addictive foods. You know, Honeycrisp apples and roasted butternut squash are not on the addictive foods list. I can overeat even, you know, foods that I would eat in normal quantities. Once I weigh them, they're fine. I put my cashews on the scale, they're fine. You know, I have a moderate amount. You know, it works.
Well, I'm glad you found that, and I'm glad you're sharing it with other people. I just wanted to make a comment. You mentioned the Star McDouglers, and Dr. John McDougall, I think he's done great work, but I'm not a believer in the starch solution. And when he tells us that we can eat pasta and potatoes, I love the way he says potatoes, and all kinds of other grains. I mean, I know people that have gone on some of his retreats and they gain weight. So unlimited starches like that is not a way to reach your ideal weight. I don't believe that. And I, you know, people that don't even pick on a diet and they just decide they're not going to eat any bread anymore, they lose weight.
Yeah.
It's that simple.
Yeah.
For some people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So now you have lots of systems in place for people to follow, and it's great. And if I know that if people do these things, even though it's uncomfortable or time consuming, if you have a goal to lose weight and you never have been able to, these things will get you there. And one of the things I just wanted to mention, because I never hear anybody mention this, and that is making your bed.
Yeah. It's one of the tools.
Yeah, it is one of the tools.
Make your bed. Yeah.
I don't know why I've never even brought it up before, but when I read it, I smiled because making your bed in the morning is the way to start the day. Respecting yourself, cleaning it up so that, you know, it's tidy and neat. And then at night, you get to unmake your bed. And it's just a wonderful thing to start fresh every day.
Yeah. Same with, like, you know, you eat the meal and then you clean up the sink. You know what I mean? The kitchen stays. It goes to bed after every meal, three meals a day, quiet, clean, you know, sponge squeezed out, sitting on the side, like it's all done, you know, totally. Now, none of that I ever did before I started not eating sugar and flour and weighing my food. Seriously, I couldn't do laundry. I couldn't do dishes. I couldn't get out of bed before noon. I was a mess.
My. Okay, so now, you know, you have this book. And it's great because the book is affordable and everything is in this book. And I recommend anyone who has struggled to get this book. But your boot camp is practically the same information, only it's interactive and people can see you, watch you, have a feedback with other
people. Yeah, there's a lot of support. There's a lot of support in the boot camp. It's very hands-on. And it's, you know, the book, I wanted to put everything in the book because, like you said, it's affordable. And I really want this message to get out, especially in our poorer communities where it's needed so much. And we couldn't put everything in the book. I mean, in the boot camp modules, actually, we never pulled more than I'd have to go back and check 40 or 60% of each module. We made sure to, like, we didn't pull more than 40 to 60%. And we figured out, like, that would result in the book that wasn't, like, so heavy that it would, you know, not be portable on a plane. So it's not all in the book, but the basic program is, for sure. Like, someone could read this book and, you know, potentially, especially if they were an introvert and they didn't need a lot of support, potentially get happy, thin, and free just from the book, for sure.
I know for me, and again, I've made my disclaimers, never had a weight loss problem. The way I learn is from books. I don't have a lot of patience for videos. I find it very efficient. I get the nuggets that I need from reading. So I imagine there are other people like me out there. But I did have the opportunity to view everything in your boot camp, and I watched all the videos.
Really?
And
that takes a lot of time.
It's
a lot in there. Yeah.
But I worked it into my schedule.
Wow.
And there was a lot. I think for people who are really trying to lose weight, I think it's really a benefit to have you as the cheerleader, and you're very candid and you share a lot of personal stories, makes it very real. I think it's powerful.
Oh, thank you.
And I watch a lot of videos. Okay. Some of it, I do to review programs for people that are considering, sharing them. And, there's a lot of crap out there in the world. There's a lot of misinformation. And I enjoyed your videos.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I'm stunned that you watch them all, given that you don't need to lose weight. This isn't your issue. I'm touched, actually. Like, I'm kind of moved that you watched all the videos in the boot camp. That's amazing.
Well, I'll tell you why. I like to think that I have integrity. And I have promoted your program. And I wanted to make sure that I was promoting a program that I could get behind.
Mm.
So I watched. Now, I have to say that your program is for everyone. Now, I'm someone who eats a plant-based diet. I'm a vegan. I would love the whole world to stop killing animals. I mean, that's how I got into this world of healthy eating. And your program, the focus is losing weight. And so your program is for vegans, vegetarians, paleo, whatever name.
Omnivore. Yeah, yeah,
people
yeah.
People out totally. There.
Yeah.
To lose weight. And that's yeah. fine.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of whole food plant-based. I was really strictly whole food plant-based for a long time. I do eat some animal food here and there these days. But basically, my philosophy around all that is I actually do talk about plant-based eating in the book and in my videos, as you know. And I do steer a lot of people. You'd be surprised how many people who do the boot camp just from that gentle influence, you know, start to be like, okay, what does tofu taste like? Okay, I'm gonna have some beans for my protein. And but my philosophy is, look, I'm asking them to give up sugar entirely and all sweeteners, flour entirely, every kind. I'm asking them to only eat three meals a day. I'm asking them to weigh their food. And their goal is, for supposedly most of them, is to lose weight and live in a right-sized body. And if there's actually things that aren't that won't keep them from that goal, I don't feel right excluding them from the plan. Like, I know mayonnaise isn't healthy, for gosh sakes, you know, like conventional mayonnaise, right? Not healthy. But it's on the plan as an option for fat. I'd rather you have avocado, but you know, I'm not gonna, you know, if someone wants to put some mayonnaise in their, you know, in their whatever, their hummus or their, I was gonna say tuna salad or their whatever, like really they're eating so many vegetables now. They've cut out processed food entirely. Like, it really gets them so much of the way there. And then my hope is that once choice is restored in their eating, they will start to really learn about what's actually healthiest and start going down that path. I just don't feel right forcing them down that path, because that's not what they come to me for. Like, they can go to Joel Fuhrman for that. You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
There are other
yep.
people doing that well already. That's not my job. My job yep. is to get them into a right-sized body and restore choice around their eating for them, so they're not a slave to Ben and Jerry's anymore. And then I've launched them on a path where the other experts in that other those other areas can pick up. So I just try to stick to my job.
Not a slave to Ben and Jerry's, which also has vegan ice cream these days. So you can't. I mean, the unfortunate thing, there are more and more vegans out there, and businesses are realizing it's a market to attract. So there are more and more processed, unhealthy foods. You can be a fat vegan.
Oh, God. And you can get super fat in the health food store. Oh, don't get. I mean, health food stores these days are only half health food, right?
They're
I mean,
not healthy. Yep.
Yeah. You yep. still just got to walk around the perimeter of a health food store to get out intact. You
oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. So there, I walk into a grocery store and most stuff I see is not food.
Right. It's not
and
food.
And that took a long time
yeah.
to get to that place. But I see boxes. It's like, I don't look at that. That's not food. Bags yeah. of chips. That's not food.
Yeah. It'd be great if everyone could get to the point where they can walk into a grocery store and just point and go like, you know, poison, 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 not food, poison, not food, poison, not food, poison. Yeah, it's not. And that's one of the mantras I teach my boot campers is that's not food. That's poison to me. You know, that's not my food. That's poison to me. And, you know, sugar, for example, the technical term is a chronic dose dependent hepatotoxin. It's a toxin.
Okay, you have this 14-day challenge, and it's still going on?
It is, yeah.
It is.
The 14-day challenge. Yes, the 14-day challenge is still going on.
I have a link on my site, but tell us what the 14-day challenge is, what we'll get out of it.
Well, you know, the boot camp is a big investment in every way, right? I mean, it's a full-on life transformation. And I just wanted people to have a sense of what they were getting into, especially like for some people aren't dive-all inners, right? Like in a cold swimming pool, I'm not a dive-all inner. I really want to wade in. And don't splash me while I'm wading in. You know, let me test it.
I'm with you.
I wanted to give people 14 days to get a sense of what it's like. And I hold their hand every step of the way through getting started. And I give them a 2-week test waiting experience of what Brightline living feels like. And then they can decide to go full in for the boot camp or not. They can just walk after that or whatever. People lose a lot of weight during it. They end up feeling great, but also they get a sense of what it's like to start to have their brain rewired for these habits. I mean, we knew already from the boot camp that almost 60% of people by the end of week 2 are experiencing little to no cravings ever. Almost 60% of people. By the end of the boot camp, it's 84% of people. And so we knew people would get a huge benefit right away from just getting the sugar and flour out of their system and giving it a try. So the 14-day challenge, there's no support. There's no like online community for it. It's just you do it by yourself, but I hold your hand. It's daily. And it's also super inexpensive, right? It's $29. And right now it's coming with a free copy of the book, which is a $25.99 hardcover Barnes & Noble book. So that's a ridiculous deal, obviously. That's going away when the book comes out, that'll go away. But anyway, so yeah, that's what you get out of it, is you get to get a sense. It's like a challenge. I want you to challenge yourself. Like, do you have what it takes to live like the world's most successful weight loss maintainers live? This is what it takes. If you've got a persistent weight problem, this is what it takes. And I show you what it takes, and you can get a sense of how it sits for you. Because Brightline Eating is not for everybody. So give it a try. See if it fits.
I like that. And Brightline Eating is not for everyone. I imagine there are some people who have tried your boot camp and then stepped away from it.
Oh, yeah. 20% of people get a refund. Like, they're like, hell no.
But, some of those people that backed away, I'm sure, have not succeeded at losing weight.
Oh, right. Yeah, obviously. And they send us love notes. They're like, I love you. I love this program, but this is really not for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like we're doing wrong by them. Some folks think that it's awful that we have such a high refund rate. And I'm like, I think it's really a good thing. Why shouldn't we want people to try it? And like, if it's legit not for them, then they move on. I think it's a good thing.
I think it's a good thing. I think you're a good thing, Susan.
You're so sweet. I liked you before. I remembered how much I liked you in the first interview. You're a doll. You're a good thing too. You're doing good stuff in the world.
You have a book signing on your release date in New York, I think, March 21st.
Tuesday night, March 21st. I think there's still a few tickets left. It's pretty full, but I think there's a few tickets left. I don't know if you can throw a link to that on your site, but yeah.
Oh, yeah, I can.
Awesome.
How long are you going to be in New York?
Like six or seven. Well, it looks like I'm getting flown out to be on the Doctors TV show in LA. That's going to extend my trip in New York City because I'm not going to fly back home for, 24 hours. So I'm going to be in New York City now for 8 days, actually. I think I'm going to fly in on Saturday and leave the following Sunday, a week later. So, yeah.
Wonderful. Okay. And I hope you can knock some sense into those doctors. On the Doctors.
Yeah, right. Good luck to me.
Okay, very good. Okay, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Susan. I was so excited to hear about your book and to speak with you again and to see all the success you're having, which means many people are having success with weight loss, and that's what it's all about.
They are ridiculous levels of success. We've got a research program and we're documenting it. So you'll be seeing papers, Karen, published in peer-reviewed scientific journals more and more. I think the first one's in press right now, or it's submitted right now. And we're about to change the entire field of the field of sustainable weight loss over the next decade or two. Yeah.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Well, maybe this is why you've been put on the planet, and you have had to go through a lot to get to where you are. And we barely even touched on that. I don't want to go into it now, but if you want to hear about Susan's story, it's all in the book.
There you go. There you go. Get the book. It's a good book.
It's not pretty.
Proud of that book.
It's not pretty.
My past is pretty gruesome.
The ending's pretty, but the beginning is rocky.
Yeah.
Okay. Big hugs to you. Thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food.
Oh, thank you, Karen. So much fun. Thank you.
Okay. That was Dr. Susan Pierce Thompson, the author of Bright Line Eating, The Science of Living Happy, Thin, and Free. Let's take a 2-minute break, and I'll be right back.